Hey, what's going on? It is At the Letters for Tuesday, February 16th. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Mike Tassoni and Christian Ryan. Ben, spring is here. It is time. Spring training starts this dang week. Are you ready?
Yeah, I am ready. Being ready this year requires...
He said confidently.
I mean, it's so much less preparation than it normally would be, right? Because, you know, in a typical spring, we would both be lucky enough to spend some time down in Dunedin, Florida. And that, of course, requires weeks and weeks of coordination with Shy, with other people, TV, radio. You're trying to make sure that everything comes together in a really well-planned way, that our coverage is there, that we've booked the right flights and made sure that we're there at the right times. This year, you know, there's no flights to book. There are no hotels to book. It's much more straightforward in a certain sense. But of course, I'll miss not being in Florida this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know. I'm bummed to not be going down. It's going to be weird, man. It's going to be interesting just how spring is kind of covered this year, right? With, kind of sounds like at least in the early going, Charlie Montoya was kind of be the White House press secretary a little bit, right? And just go out and read the news of the day and happening. You know, it's going to be tough, right? With not having eyes on bullpens and not having eyes on what's going on the field and, you know, who is throwing and actually more importantly, like who isn't throwing, who's taking reps at various positions around the diamond, you know, and even just like that hour of time that you get in the clubhouse every morning in spring training, like 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., when players are at their lockers and you can have conversations with them and learn stuff and get to know them and get to tell their stories. It's always a really valuable time from a journalist's perspective because, you know, everybody's pretty relaxed. It's early in the morning. Nobody's in a slump yet. Like nobody's lost a game yet. You know, typically nobody's really hurt yet. So it's the beginning of the season and the grind hasn't really gotten to anyone. So it is a really good time to kind of set up your entire year and your entire season as somebody who covers a team. So it's going to be interesting to try to navigate these next 6 weeks from here in Toronto.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you just think about some of the times that we're actually closest to the actual game of baseball is at spring training. You know, in the course of the season, we have good seats. You know, for the most part, we're in press boxes that are pretty close to the action and definitely not complaining about watching a ball game from a press box. In fact, that sounds awesome right now, but you know, in spring, it's honestly up another level. Like you can watch bullpens at times from me to the end of this table. Like it's a matter of feet rather than any other sort of measurement. You're so close. It's so intimate with the swings at BP, the bullpen sessions that are happening, the interactions between coaches and players, the drills that are happening. It's not 200 feet away from you in the outfield. It's 10 feet away from you along the right field line. So it just leads to a different level of understanding and intimacy with what's happening. Obviously not necessary this year. And so that's just the way it is, but certainly it's a lot of fun to be that close. And it lends a different kind of perspective on the preparation that goes into a major league season.
At the Gang Mounds, kind of the complex that you are standing, like you're the ump, like right behind the catcher. And you get such a cool perspective just on guys' stuff, just on how hard guys are throwing and how their stuff is moving. Like, you know, the further away you get from the game, whether it's the first row of seats, whether it's press box, whether it's on TV from home, the slower it looks and, you know, the easier it looks. And, you know, just like you just lose something with each level of remove. So to be right there, like literally, you know, as the ball's coming at you, you really do get that really valuable perspective on how insanely hard it is to make good contact in MLB. It's insane that anybody ever hits a home run. Like the way some of this stuff moves, like the one I'll never forget is, and this wasn't even like a bullpen. This was just throwing, just playing catch on flat ground, R.A. Dickey. And I'm standing behind Josh Toley and Dickey is throwing knuckleballs to Toley. And like this thing is, I don't know how anybody hit it. And he's just throwing on the, you know, he was probably throwing 50, 60%. Like he's not on the mound or anything. He's not full bear. And this thing is just all over the place. It was unbelievable to watch.
Yeah. And even just seeing some of the, you know, again, like they're not on mounds necessarily, but just they're warming up and they'll snap off maybe a breaking ball or slider here and there. You're like, oh my goodness, this is like, this is crazy. And this is
how
like
do you do that?
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. I always think like, you know, for anyone who's able to, I think it's a good idea for anyone covering a sport to try to play it once in a while. And so, you know, for me, I try to play baseball once or twice a year, you know, at least play catch. And it's even then it's a reminder, especially as you get a bit older, you're like, oh man, this hurts. And then, you know, being that close during spring training is a great way to kind of reinforce that.
So let's take a look at some of these, some of the storylines and some of the things that we are looking for heading into Blue Jays camp as it opens. And let's start with pitching, because that's probably going to be sort of the big topic throughout camp. And it's still like somewhat of a lingering topic, like from the off season. Like, how do you feel about the starting corps that the Blue Jays have assembled? Do you think that there's still an addition to be made there? Do you think they are fine as is? How do you see this shaking out?
I think it's okay. I mean, it's the weak spot of a really good offseason. I think when you look at this Jays team and what they did in the course of the last few months, they're way better. And it was a really good offseason. But if there's a weak spot in this offseason, it's what they did with the starting rotation. And that's Robbie Ray, Steven Matz, Tyler Chatwood might have a chance to win a rotation spot the way things are shaping up now. Liriano, of course, in a minor league deal. You know, it's a little bit better. They've nudged things forward from where it was, but it's not a lot better. My sense is that this team right now is close to tapped out from a financial standpoint. I don't get the sense that, you know, they're going to sign anyone to a multi-year deal. I think they're focused on shorter term. And even on shorter term, like, I don't think they've got a ton of breathing room. I don't think they're going to win, you know, or be in a rush to get into bidding wars for these guys. So as much as a Taiwan Walker would be a fit on paper, I don't even necessarily see him as a super likely fit for this team right now.
What do you make of James Paxton going to Seattle for a year, maybe eight, with, you know, bonuses that could take it to 10? You know, when you look at it, sort of compare it to the Kluber deal at 111, it's like, oh, like, that's kind of light. But there's got to be a reason for that. And there's probably got to be a reason that the Blue Jays didn't get involved at that level.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know exactly what that reason is. I'd like to find out. But, you know, I think when you look at Kluber and Paxton, I thought, you know, they were pretty comparable. I thought they were the two most comparable pitchers. You know, if you're trying to compare Paxton to anyone, I thought it would be Kluber. So I thought Paxton would probably be around that number, give or take. And he was below it by, you know, a couple million, which is significant, I think, in the one-year market. And so what it suggests to me, I don't know if this is the case, but it suggests that that bullpen session he had for teams maybe was less than impressive. I don't know. That's reading between the lines. But, you know, if he went out there and he had his vintage stuff, maybe that price is a little bit closer to Kluber's.
It's kind of like an Occam's razor kind of thing. Like, there's always a simple explanation for things like this. So it could be the bullpen session and maybe it wasn't that impressive, or maybe, you know, he's not holding his velocity the way that the clubs would want to. Maybe there's something in the medicals that, you know, teams aren't thrilled about. Again, I'm just speculating, but I'm just looking at what the simple kind of explanations could be. You know, maybe he just wanted to be on the West Coast. Maybe the Blue Jays were like, hey, we'll give you a, you know, 1 and 11 million. And he was just like, I just kind of want to be out West because that's where I'm from, you know, and I'm going to go play in Seattle for a year. I mean, like, there's, you know, or maybe as you alluded to earlier, like, the Blue Jays just couldn't afford the price, like, couldn't beat what Seattle was offering in a meaningful way, or what it would take to beat it was beyond what they had set their walkaway at. So I would think that of these possibilities that we've identified, you know, one of them is the likely scenario. What's interesting is then to spin that off into how it would impact Walker or Odorizzi. I think, you know, we both anticipate Odorizzi is going to get multiple years, certainly. Walker, I mean, we went into it on the last episode. 2.70 ERA, made all of his starts, 28 years old. It's kind of wild that he's, you know, that he wouldn't get multiple years. But even on a one-year deal, you would think that it would be 10, 11, 12, 13, $14 million somewhere in there. That might just be prohibitive for the Blue Jays at this time.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you know, the Jays had interest in Paxton. They've had interest earlier in the offseason in Walker and even in Odorizzi. So, I mean, those guys are fits on paper, but my sense is that the team would probably have to get a bit more creative as far as structures. You know, you see Kevin Pillar's deal with the Mets in 2 years, and, you know, there's a player option, and then there's a team option on top of that, all of which is designed to lessen the 2021 CBT hit for the Mets. So if the Blue Jays wanted to get into that territory for these guys, sure, you could do it. But I don't sense, not that it's a CBT issue for the Jays, but I don't sense that that's the way the team is leaning at this point. And again, this is reading between the lines, but you know, I don't think that I'm not holding my breath for Jake Odorizzi, not holding my breath for Taiwan Walker at this point. I think this is the team they're going to start with. We'll see. You know, things can change and the need exists. I mean, there's no question about that. None of what I'm saying here is meant to take away from the fact that this team absolutely could use a number two starting pitcher. And that need will exist maybe for months, maybe for years. We don't know. But they definitely, you know, that opportunity exists right now. I don't sense that anything is imminent, though.
And then I guess the calculus that the Blue Jays would do at that point is like, okay, so we could, you know, blow the rest of our budget or like to creatively use the rest of our budget or whatever, like find a way to bring in a Walker or an Odorizzi, or we could have done it with Paxton. But then we're not really saving any wiggle room for in the season and for the trade deadline and for, you know, down the line. And the trade-off there is, okay, bringing in an Odorizzi or a Walker, say like a projection of 1.5-2 wins. As a player, would you think like 3 in a really, really good scenario? As Blue Jays, you might be like looking internally at like some combination of like Trent Thornton or Anthony Kay or Thomas Hatch and saying, well, like we could probably get something like that out of one of these guys or close to it. And then we can get to the trade deadline and reassess and see where we're at. And then maybe we end up going after the 2021 version of Taiwan Walker and Robbie Ray from last trade deadline. And we have a bit of money to work with because we saved a little bit of it. So we can take on some salary here. And like, you know, think about the San Francisco Giants, right? Playing in the NL West with two absolute like behemoth teams. If they aren't in it come July 31st and hey man, Kevin Gausman's on an expiring deal and you can't qualify him again. And we know the Blue Jays like Kevin Gausman. He wouldn't take their money 2 winters in a row. Well, they could just force him to play for them by trading for him.
Yeah.
Maybe that lines up, right? Like there's going to be a lot of pitchers like that available come the trade deadline who the Blue Jays can get. And as we saw last trade deadline, the price isn't super, super steep for guys like that. And the Blue Jays certainly have the prospect capital to pay that price. So if you have that prospect capital, you preserve that budgetary room, I think the Blue Jays can feel good about staying in the race, staying competitive through the first 3-4 months of the season, and then get to that point and be like, all right, if we need to address our pitching, we can go out and do that. And we still have that ability. So I could see them arriving at that conclusion.
Yeah, agreed. You know, and I think that it's probably the difference between an A-plus offseason and an A-minus offseason, really. Like, they had a really good offseason. I think it's the best offseason in recent memory that I can certainly think of. Obviously, in hindsight, the Donaldson trade was actually great, and so was the Russell Martin signing. So 14-15 was good, but this is, I mean, that's 6 years ago. So this is the best offseason they've had probably in 6 years. And, I, you know, if they had added Gausman, like if he had taken that deal and they had him for 3 years and $40 million or whatever it was, it's probably an A-plus offseason, you know, to address their pitching, their infield, their outfield, their bullpen. That probably would be the A-plus offseason, you know, and at this point, it's more like an A or an A-minus. So it doesn't mean that they're a perfect team. You know, they're still up against the Rays, who added, you know, Rich Hill the other day, which is super interesting what they're doing with their pitching staff, just kind of using the IL as an option. Kind of taxi squad there. The Red Sox aren't as bad as I think a lot of people think. Like the Red Sox are kind of going to be okay this year and maybe better than that. So it's a tough division that they're in. It's always the case. It's stating the obvious, but the Jays are way better equipped to contend in that division than they were a few months ago.
So let's talk about who is actually here to be starting pitchers. So, you know, I feel pretty comfortable, you know, writing in Hyunjin Ryu, Nate Pearson, Robbie Ray, Tanner Roark to this quote-unquote rotation. I put rotation quotes because I don't know what a rotation is going to be this season. Like, I don't know if it's going to be just a traditional 5 guys on turn. I would almost like doubt that. I don't know what it's going to look like towards sort of the back end of it, where the Blue Jays have clearly stockpiled sort of fungible dudes. Tyler Chatwood and Ross Stripling, Julian Merriweather's on the team, Steven Matz even you could put into that category. So like these fungible arms, like how are they going to be used? Are we going to see something that sort of looks like piggybacking, but isn't like, you know, directly called piggybacking coming into the start? Are the Blue Jays going to run with like a six-man rotation at times. All I'm certain of is that every team's going to need a real bottomless pit of pitching depth, because you are going from 60 games to 162. So that is like a 170% increase in innings that need to be covered. So you're going to need bulk out of your bullpen, and you're going to need spot starters. And like, you're going to need guys with options who can be coming up and down from AAA. I mean, you're going to have a lot of dudes, you know, having to miss starts and take 10-day ILs because of inflammation and fatigue and soreness and strains. Like, so you're going to need the ability to backfill with legit major league arms, like with guys who throw strikes, with legit major league pitches that get swing and miss and soft contact from big league hitters. You know, I think the Blue Jays have built out that depth as well as they can. Is it going to be deep enough? I don't know. And I'm not sure any team's going to have enough of it in this strange season.
Yeah, you need so many arms and guys with options like Merriweather, Thornton, Zoik, Wagispack. I mean, those guys can be useful just as far as shuttling back and forth. And we know that we're going to see that, of course, from the Blue Jays and from most teams this year. So I think that's one aspect of the pitching staff that we're going to see. As you said, you kind of have some veteran guys plus Pearson. You kind of assume as long as they're healthy, they're probably going to start just about every turn in the rotation. But health can come and go really quickly. So I almost think that, you know, if you're Pete Walker and Charlie Montoyo and Ross Atkins mapping this out, I almost think that like they're probably looking 3 to 5 days ahead of time at once. Like I just think you chunk it into these little chunks as opposed to thinking, you know, a month ahead. And so you compile all the arms you can, figure out who's healthy on a given moment, keep a few guys on the taxi squad, and then make it up almost day by day.
Yeah, no, and so I think we are going to see Trent Thornton have his starts to make, and Thomas Hatch have his starts to make, and TJ Zoik and Anthony Kay. And then we're going to find some things out about these guys. And it's actually kind of a good year for the Blue Jays to find some things out about those types of pitchers. Because while they have certainly like taken a step forward, no one's going to pick them as a favorite in the American League East. The Blue Jays are competing for a wild card spot this year, which is an improvement over what they were doing entering 2020. Obviously, they got there at the end of the year in an expanded postseason, but this year that's the tier that they're in right now. And even if you did sign a Paxton or a Walker, it doesn't bump you up to, you know, surpassing the Yankees. So this is a good year to kind of find out like if a K is going to be a thing, if a Thomas Hatch is going to be a thing, like to kind of let the kids pitch a little bit. And we call them kids.
Right.
Thomas Hatch is like 26.
Julian Merriweather is like our age. Yeah.
Right?
No,
yeah.
I know. It's, yeah.
Julian Merriweather is like in his 30s.
Yeah.
Trent Thornton is like 28.
Yeah. And
these are guys who
they're
are
not
like
kids.
Yeah. Entering their athletic primes. So let them pitch. Like, yep. Let's see what you have, right? And see if they're a thing, because you're not going to have that type of opportunity next season, whenever the next season is with the work stoppage, because that's when it's like, it's go time. It's win time, baby. Like it is, we are signing somebody from the top of the free agent market and we are like pushing ahead, and Jordan Groshans is a big leaguer and Simeon Woods Richardson's a big leaguer. And like, here we go. So right now is actually a good time to use some of that opportunity and find out what you have. And that's kind of the other side of bringing in like an Odorizzi, a Paxton, a Walker. There is an opportunity cost there.
For sure. But, you know, don't you think it's win time now for this team, just where they are and after the additions they've made?
I mean, win a wild card. Like,
yeah,
I don't think they're going to win the AL East.
No, mm-hmm. I don't. I wouldn't predict they will.
Yeah.
I will not. In fact, I will predict that the Yankees will. But and look, I mean, that's like the only reasonable prediction that you could have, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe some people know some stuff that we don't. Like, based on the information that's out there, the Yankees, that's the reasonable choice. But there are all kinds of favorites across baseball in any given decade that fall short of their potential. And so maybe the 2021 Yankees will be one of those teams. Like, for all, I know the rotation projects to be good, but, you know, if Gerrit Cole, you know, and I hope that this doesn't happen. I like watching Gerrit Cole. But if he pulls a hamstring, he's out for 6 weeks at the beginning of the year, like all of a sudden that rotation is just not that good. Like, and I know it's weird to say, but there's maybe not good is the wrong way to describe it, but there's just so much volatility in that rotation, so much uncertainty. You know, is Tyone going to be ready? Is Kluber going to be ready? Herman's coming back. Severino's coming back. Like, I don't necessarily see that rotation as just this like solid entity. So I think there's a sliver of opportunity for the Jays atop the division.
I would suggest that there is going to be even more volatility this year in baseball than normal, just because of the season that we're coming off of, and particularly from a pitching perspective, right? Because nobody knows how a lot of these guys are going to react to having this weird year where their workloads were all screwed up and their routines were all screwed up. Now you're starting a new year where like everybody's got to play 162 again. So like that, nobody knows how this is going to play out. Like, we, like Ben, we don't know what we don't know, right?
Yeah.
So we, you know, like I think about it this way. Going into the 2020 season, was Jordan Romano thought of as a high leverage back of the bullpen weapon? Was Teoscar Hernandez being talked about as like an MVP candidate, as like a silver slugger winner? And that it cuts the other way, right? Whereas going into the 2020 season, I think we would have said, yeah, look, Tanner Roark's been like a league average guy his entire career. We would expect that he'll continue to be league average. He's had some problems with home runs, and his home run to fly ball rate's been like really elevated over the last couple of years. So like you would expect that to regress to the mean. None of those things happened, right? So like some of the things that we believe now and that people believe now about this pitching staff with Blue Jays chances, about players who aren't going to be an impact, players who are going to be proven wrong, you know, and there are players on this team who are going to emerge and outperform their expectations. And there are players who are going to underperform what you expect them to do. And then there are players who, like, you might be thinking, you know, expecting a whole bunch of play appearances from, or a whole bunch of innings from, who are going to suffer, you know, a really bad injury in the second month of the year and be done. So,
or if Tanner Roark has a 6.5 ERA on May 15th,
yeah,
like, I don't think he's assured of a roster spot on May 16th, you know,
totally.
And that applies to a lot of different players.
So that is kind of like the Dunning-Kruger aspect of all this. Like we don't know, right? So, you know, I'm certainly going to be as guarded as possible in trying to predict this season, because I think it's just going to be a strange one. And I think the volatility is going to be increased. What do you think about the bullpen that the Blue Jays have built? And you know, they've really layered in a number of pieces there. And this kind of ties into the discussion we just had about like what the rotation is going to be and who's going to be in the bullpen and who's not, and how guys are going to be used out of the bullpen. Will it look like 2020, where we saw a lot of bulk outings out of there? Will guys like Orion Baruchy kind of fall back into like a one inning role, into, you know, will we see more shorter stints out of guys? Like the one thing that you would have heard from a lot of guys in that bullpen in 2020 was like, we could not have done this over 6 months. Over 2 months, sure, like you can pitch us like this and we can have the workloads that we're putting up, but over 6 months, it's not sustainable. So what do you think of what the Blue Jays are entering the season with in the bullpen?
I think if Kirby Yates is healthy, then this bullpen's really good. And you know, he's saying that he's been throwing and feeling good, so that's a great sign. Obviously, the Blue Jays believe that he's healthy, or they wouldn't have signed him. But he's just such a huge potential difference maker for this staff. And I think that anytime you add someone like him who can be just a dominant, like you think Jordan Romano and Rafael Dolis were good last year, like watch some Kirby, and I know you have, Arden, but watch some Kirby Yates clips from 2019. Whoa, was that guy ever good? So that's a potential huge addition. And I think that with Romano and Dolis, AJ Cole back on a minor league deal, Baruchy out of the bullpen, those are all good pitchers. David Phelps, you know, he obviously didn't have a good year in 2020, but see what happens as he, you know, gets a bit of a, you know, more sample size. Obviously, these tiny little home run issue guys from 2020, guys like Matz or Phelps. I mean, the Blue Jays seem to be making a bet that those are small samples that aren't reflective of how good these guys really are. So collectively, I think it's a group that should be pretty good. I do think there's room for a second lefty reliever. You know, like what happens if Ryan Barucki's gone 2 days in a row and you need someone to get out, you know, whatever lineup you're facing that day. I mean, the Rays have a lot of lefties. The Red Sox have a few lefties with guys like Devers and Verdugo. So you need to have answers to that. I don't see great answers to that, but you know, that's starting to nitpick. I think big picture, it's a solid group in the bullpen.
Yeah, I will say the Blue Jays haven't been hesitant to go without a second lefty in recent seasons.
Yeah.
Like we've seen, like, I don't know that like philosophically they believe that you need a second lefty.
And there are good arguments to not even needing that. So that's fine.
And they'll typically identify a right-handed pitcher in the bullpen who has like reverse splits and who has stuff that's effective against left-handers. So you think I was like hesitant to make any like bold predictions about the starting rotation, like hello bullpen, where who the hell knows, man? Again, going into 2020, when the bullpen was like Ken Giles is the closer, which was like, all right, you feel pretty good there. His setup men were like Jordan Amano, who was not Jordan Amano yet, was like coming off of a friggin' 7.5 ERA season and was unproven. Rafael Dolis was coming over from, you know, a few years in Japan. Who knew what you were going to get from him? And Anthony Bass, who came off waivers. Like that was the back end of your bullpen. I don't think that going into 2020, I would have said this is going to be a strong bullpen. It turned out to be a strength. So it's just impossible to predict what it's going to be. I mean, the biggest question for me really is just who's going to stay healthy. Cause I just think that like, that's the biggest question for all pitchers this year is like, who's going to make it, who's going to get through this thing? You know, how many arms are you going to need to go through? Like, do we get to, you know, a point in May where it's like Jordan Amano has something bothering him and Kirby Snead's, you know, had a little setback
Just Kirby Yates.
What did I say? Kirby Snead.
I mean, let's hope he doesn't have a setback either.
All right. Well, yeah. I hope he doesn't
either. Couple Kirbys on this team.
Yeah. What kind of team has two Kirbys? Right. Kirby Yates has a setback. And then all of a sudden it's like, you're like looking around and the Blue Jays are again off on waivers, like looking for, you know, the Brian Morans of this world. Right. So like that can happen very quickly as well. I don't know. I just think the Blue Jays are going to need as much depth as possible. And I think they have built a good amount of depth, but I just don't know that any team can build as much as it's going to need.
Yeah. And so you have to be prepared to add during the season. And it's tough to do in the early months of the year when you kind of have to ride out what you have. Then July 31st, you can make some additions. And I can already guarantee we'll be writing articles about, you know, what do they need to do or what could they do? You know, as you said with Gausman, it's almost not even too early to start looking at who could be out there. You know, I'm sure they've thought about it internally, right? I'm sure that this is a thought that has crossed the minds of the Toronto Blue Jays brain trust as well.
They're looking at the Danny Duffys of this world and, you know,
Dylan Bundy. Early to send out a pro scout. See what's going on.
Yeah, what's Texas going to do with Jordan Lyles? You know, if they aren't in it. So it's important to remember that. It's important to remember it's a long haul. And the last thing in this segment I'll say is that it's important to remember, like, it doesn't matter who breaks on opening day. Like, your opening day roster does not matter because it's probably going to, you know, the roster for the first game of the first series of the year is going to be different than the roster for the first game of the second series of the year. Reliable.
If you lose by 6 runs on opening day, you're optioning someone that evening, right? Whoever picked up those garbage innings, like, he's probably gone.
No. So I think that, you know, always you should look more at like kind of the totality of the 40 man, but this year in particular is the totality of the 40 man that matters. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about that on the position players side when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith, our producers, Mike Tassoni, and Christian Ryan. Ben, I want to pick up on something that I mentioned at the end of the first block there, and that's just the Blue Jays 40-man roster. And the fact that the Blue Jays are having to make more difficult decisions on sort of the fringes of that roster than they were in prior years. You know, in 2020, 2019, 18, et cetera, you know, you could pretty much pick which guys were going to be DFA'd next. Like, it was, you know, there was some flack, some chaff.
Sometimes it wasn't so easy to pick. Sometimes you had like a multiple choice, you know, set of options, each of which was equally compelling.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I guess what I'm trying to say is like now the Blue Jays are kind of making tougher decisions.
Yeah.
You look at Shun Yamaguchi being DFA'd and the Blue Jays saying like, hey, we're in a position where the thing that makes the most sense for us is to like eat $3+ million. You look at Derek Fisher being DFA'd. That's a player that the Blue Jays front office clearly liked and wanted to give opportunities to, and people clearly believed in them. And they were like, we just don't have that opportunity to give anymore. And that's the odd man out. Like, I just think that the Blue Jays have built a much deeper 40 man, and you know, the edges of it are now populated with like interesting young up and coming prospects like an Otto Lopez, you know, players like that. So it's you know, I just think it's kind of an under the radar thing that's happened for this club, where I'm not saying they have the 40 of the Rays or the 40 of the Dodgers, but they are moving more in that direction than they have been in recent years.
For sure. And, you know, the 40 man is really important, especially when the 25 man roster is in flux all the time. So what are you really dealing with? It's the 40 players. So that matters a lot, the overall strength of that 40 person group. And in this case, as you say, Arden, like when you're cutting loose guys like Yamaguchi, Derek Fisher, it just illustrates that this team has gotten better at the bottom of its roster, because the Jays were watching the games last year too. Like, they knew that Derek Fisher totally botched catchable balls in the outfield and that he was basically not trustworthy defensively. Like, how could you trust him after watching that game unfold? But they didn't have someone better to put on the 40 man. So you're not going to just, you know, DFA him out of spite and, you know, potentially lose out on an opportunity. You wait until there's something better. And now we're at the point in the offseason where Yamaguchi, Fisher, these guys were obviously not necessary to the Blue Jays. And some people would say they weren't even necessary in 2020. But the fact is, now the Jays have better players to replace them with. And so, you know, like I look at the roster now, and there's probably one guy, you know, Joel Piamps, like you could cut him without losing too much sleep. Beyond that, it starts to get a little bit harder.
Yeah, if you need a spot for an AJ Cole or a Francisco Liriano or a Joe Panic.
Which you probably will for one of, at least of those guys.
I would think for one of those guys.
Yeah.
Certainly. You brought something up that I like. Let's just touch on it. Let's do a little aside, a little Derek Fisher aside, okay? Because we're never going to talk about him yet. So can you think of a player who had a more toxic, hostile time as a Blue Jay?
No.
Like, you think of a guy who was like just more just like anytime you just anything he did or anytime you wrote about him or threw his name out there, it was just like hitting sticks of dynamite together.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of somebody for a player who, by the way, made like 150 plate appearances as a Blue Jay. That's it. Like, did play appeared in like 50 games. Appeared in like in the totality of his Blue Jays career was like a third of a season.
Oh yeah. Now, Arden, let me put you on the spot here for a second. This is a little bit unfair, but it's more for the purpose of people listening in. So if you had to guess, what would you say Derek Fisher's OPS was in 2020?
I don't know. 750.
811. which I think is probably a lot higher than what most people would have guessed.
But like, how many plate appearances did he have?
40? 39.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the guy barely played.
Yeah.
And it was like, at everything, like the quote unquote discourse around him was so hostile.
Discourse is putting it gently. Yeah.
And so toxic. Like, dude, Yonervis Solarte played like an entire year for this team, wouldn't run out ground balls. That guy made like 500 plate appearances. Nobody hated him nearly as much as people hated Derek Fisher. Brandon
Jonathan
Drury.
VR.
Just
a disaster.
Ryan Goins was beloved in this market.
He got a standing ovation.
Nothing against the guy.
Yeah.
But I would bet you want to play the OPS game. I would bet you Derek Fisher's got a much better OPS for his career than Ryan Goins.
Derek Fisher had a 690 in his Blue Jays career. Let's see Ryan Goins.
So look at Ryan Goins. I mean, and that's a guy who multiple seasons, I'm sure well over 1,000 plate appearances.
611.
Yeah.
611 for Ryan Goins. In a standing O. I mean, look, Ryan Goins was a really good defender. Derek Fisher was one of the worst defensive performers that we've seen. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't have some skills, okay? We know he's a fast runner. But as far as actual performance, like, it was truly awful. It was truly awful defensively.
I don't deny that.
He had two balls hit him in the face.
Yeah. I don't deny that.
One hit him in the face for sure. One off the glove in the face area. Like, it was not good. And I do not delight in saying that either. I really don't.
Have some empathy for the guy. Like, imagine, like, you know, how humiliating.
Humiliating is the right word. He's on TV in front of millions of people, millions of highlight shows, and he's well compensated for this. He's made millions of dollars in his career. So, you know, that factors in as well. But I don't delight in pointing out that Derek Fisher was a very bad defensive player. It's just, he was. And yet, I totally agree with you, Arden. Like, when there is no safer guarantee of getting ratioed. And like, I've got a few ways. I've got a few ways in my playbook of getting ratioed. Yeah. But there is no safer bet than tweeting something about Derek Fisher.
What's hilarious about the whole thing. So people are like, he was that much of a trigger for people because of who he was traded for, right? Because of that deal. And when that deal happened, the reaction was like so viscerally opposed to that deal, to Aaron Sanchez, Joe Biagini, and Cal Stevenson going the other way. You know who lasted the longest in the organization that they were traded to from that deal? Derek Fisher.
It's a lose-lose trade right there.
Derek Fisher. So unless you are a like Cal Stevenson truther and you think that he is going to become, you know, the next great outfielder, and you think the Blue Jays like Delta prospect that they are going to regret for the rest of their lives, there's no basis to dislike this trade today. And there is really no basis to dislike it as viscerally as people did when it went down. Think about how upset people were about the Marcus Stroman trade. Simeon Woods Richardson, who's that? I've never heard of this guy. They didn't even get back a top 100 prospect. Well, now Simeon Woods Richardson is like the best pitching prospect in the organization because Nate Pearson's a big leaguer now. So all of a sudden, like, you've got a guy who, by the way, might make his major league debut this year, on top of Anthony Kay, who has, like, you know, at least been serviceable for this club for the last couple of years. And it cuts the other direction as well. Remember how positive people felt about the return for Roberto Osuna, right? Ken Giles, David Paulino, and I am blanking, Hector Perez, right? Are any of those players still on the Houston Astros or the Toronto Blue Jays? No,
they're not. Yeah,
they're not, right? So that's another trade that was kind of like a nothing trade in either direction. So you think about it, like, it let this be the last time that like anyone reacts so hostily or like with such hostility or reacts like so viscerally or so rashly to a trade in the moment when it is made. Take this lesson, this L and in more ways than one, and apply it forward and have a little bit of perspective. So the next time that like a really unpopular trade happens, you think, all right, let's see how this plays out. Because we have seen it time and again. People hated the Marco Estrada trade. Adam Lind for Marco Estrada. People hated it. The Marco Estrada became a playoff hero. People hated the Jay Happ signing for 3 years. And the Blue Jays made that free agent signing. And he ended up being really, really good for the Blue Jays. So just remember that it's baseball. It takes some time to play out. You got to let things formulate and materialize before you get too upset.
It's almost as though your casual fan on day one of a trade cannot fully assess how it's going to play out in the totality of time. I do this too. Like, and sometimes I do it because I have an opinion and I want to share it. Sometimes I do it because, you know, whatever, we're on the fan or we're doing some sort of hit and we have to come up with an opinion. That's fine. You know, that's part of it. And you say what you know or say what you think in those moments. And I hope to have enough humility to say that, look, like, we don't know how this is going to look in the course of time, because these things do change really quickly. Sometimes you can kind of deceive yourself, right? Because sometimes you think you know, and sometimes you're right. Like with the Josh Donaldson trade, I'm not trying to like brag or anything, but when the Jays made that trade, I thought that was a great trade, and it was a great trade. It's one of the best trades in the history of their franchise. So sometimes you can have an inkling, but who knows? If Franklin Barreto had gone on to become the next, I don't know, I was going to say Willy Adames, but yeah, like, you know, better than that. Like if he had been like the next Corey Seager or something, then, you know, that probably would have changed the discussion around that trade.
Sure. And Derek Fisher's going to get opportunities, it seems. Milwaukee is going to at least get to compete for a job. Like, it's still not out of the question that Derek Fisher becomes a major league player.
No.
Like he belongs to that like interesting class of player sort of between the ages of like 25 and 30. Who has some sort of like tools or traits that make teams take bets on him. So like in Fisher's case, like obviously the sprint speed, obviously the exit velos and the walk rate and the AAA numbers, by the way, that are like insane, like the 900 OPS over 1,000 AAA plate appearances with a ton of homers and a strong strikeout to walk. And so like all these things like, this is why Socrates Brito keeps getting chances, right? Like, this is why clubs give opportunities to these guys. It's not always going to work out, It's, you know, a lot of the time it's not going to work out, but sometimes you end up with Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
Who at like, you know, at Derek Fisher's age was still, you know, quad A, like, you know, on waivers being traded in like deals like this type of dude. Like the
Nelson
fact
Cruz.
That Derek, right. Edwin Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson. We were just talking about him. Josh Donaldson at like 26 was quad A catcher, right? With Oakland, had a position change. People were like, oh, is this guy ever going to put it together? A guy becomes an MVP. The fact that Derek Fisher still had trade value speaks to, you know, what the belief the teams have in him. He brought back cash and a player to be named later. He had trade value. So that also speaks to your point earlier about how you don't just like bang a guy off the 40-man roster as a punishment. Right. The guy had trade value. So I just like, I don't know. I just wanted to go down that road a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't think of, you know, and Brito's maybe another good example, but Brito's even a guy who had even less actual playing time on the Blue Jays than Derek Fisher did. I just can't remember a guy who had a rougher ride.
I'll say this, like personally, like, and the players, because we watch a lot of baseball and there's some players you love to watch and there's some players, candidly, you hate to watch. And the players that I don't like watching are the guys who are just out of it. If they're out of it, if they show a lack of effort, I'm just like, I can't, like, I lose my patience with those players. And so that's why, like, you know, there are players who in the course of, you know, you watch a lot of baseball games, sometimes you can tell they're not trying, they're checked out. Or, you know, we, in the past, we used to see more behind the scenes stuff. You know, are they showing up late? Are they putting in that effort? Are they doing their prep work? Like, that to me is like, those are the guys. But Derek Fisher never struck me as someone who wasn't trying. Didn't work out, and he didn't play as well as the Jays wanted, but I never got the impression he wasn't trying.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays, and this is a good thing if you're a fan of the Blue Jays, just aren't in a position to give guys like that those opportunities anymore.
Yeah,
because they just need to maximize every bit of their 40-man roster, as you, you know, alluded to in the first half, to compete this year, right? To try to win and try to win a wild card spot. They're no longer taking these bets on the Britos of the world and the Fishers of the world. That's for, you know, Ben Sherrington in Pittsburgh to take
those
bets now, right?
It's a perfect Pirates piece.
Right. Or Mike Elias in Baltimore. Like, that's, you know, that's where those bets are going to be made. The Blue Jays have moved out of that phase. And going forward are going to have to try to maximize their 40 man. What do you think about the position player group, you know, to that end that has been put together here? Like, what do you think about how the Blue Jays lineups are going to look, about what Charlie Montoyo is going to have to weigh on a night-to-night basis? Was he finally filling out his lineup card? Like, what do you think about this offense?
I think it's great. I think they have a great position player group. Like, it's the strength of the team. If they make the playoffs, it'll probably be because this group just mashes their way through the American League and hits a ton of home runs, scores a ton of runs, and plays improved defense. So yeah, I think this is the reason the Blue Jays are as intriguing as they are. It's the biggest area that they've addressed this offseason. I think it's going to be really fun to watch in 2021.
I think the biggest thing that I'll be looking for in spring and early into the season will just be the continued development of certain guys. Like, we do forget that, you know, Bo Bichette's at an age where he can still get rapidly better. Like, he can still improve. And he is a guy specifically who has gone away every winter and every offseason and come back improved and come back like, oh, hey, I'm a base runner now. Like, oh, hey, I got a lot better at shortstop than I once was. Extend that to like a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who obviously, like, Vladdy watch is going to be a thing all spring. And, you know, people are going to be like getting, like, trying to, you know, get measurements, all kinds of things with him. The conditioning is going to be improved. And his physique is going to look better. I think the body composition is going to look a lot better.
For Vladdy.
Past Bo. For Vladdy.
I actually, just to go back to Bo real quick, I actually think Bo, like, saw a few photos of him. Looks like he's added some muscle, which a lot of guys do over the offseason. They kind of lose it in the season.
Yeah.
But, like, looks like, you know, we all think about Vlad and fixate on his conditioning, but also it's looking like Bo is in great shape. So a good sign for Jays.
Yeah, guys usually come into the year like bulkier. They put on a bunch of muscle, and then it's hard to maintain that.
Oh, in the heat, season, man.
You lose it. Especially with the amount of, like, quote unquote cardio that these guys have with playing games like every night. You know, you do just kind of bleed it away a little bit. I think with Vlad, I'm really going to be watching the plate approach. I'm really going to be watching, like, his plate appearances, the pitches that he is and is not swinging at. I'm going to be looking at how the ball is coming off of his bat. If it's going, like, line drive or up, or if it's going down, and just, you know, just kind of the discipline. And, you know, he vied the one thing about him, man, he really does sort of wear his emotions on his sleeve a little bit in the box. Like, it's not hard to kind of see how he's feeling about how a plate appearance is going. And we've seen the bad side of that the last couple of years. We've seen him frustrated, seen him expand, you know, see him like smacking his bat and talking to himself and angry. And for those of us who like watched him coming up through the minors, we've also seen like the Juan Soto side of that, like the really confident dude, like the guy who's, you know, like taking a really tough pitch and like shaking his head at it, because he's like, yeah, no, you're not gonna get me to swing at that, you know, like the really almost kind of cocky guy who is like owning the box. So I'm gonna be watching all of those things, more so than, you know, his conditioning, which we know is gonna be improved and we know he's gonna look better. But I just think that another year of maturity, another year of, you know, development, better preparation, you know, having a better plan at the plate, a lot of those things, how those things kind of coalesce and come together, that's gonna be really interesting for me to watch.
Yeah, great point. I think that pitch-to-pitch kind of presence that you have in the batter's box, and Soto, I mean, he does such an exceptional job, especially being so young, because I think that's probably a skill, if you could graph it, it probably would peak a bit later in your career when you have just more familiarity with pitchers and umpires and the cadence pitch-to-pitch of how an at-bat might unfold. But Soto, 21, 22, has incredible command of every at-bat that he's in. He'll call timeout strategically. Obviously, the body language, you know, tells you that he's in control of what's happening on the field. And Vladdy sometimes, you know, I'm not saying he's copying Soto, but sometimes you'll see similar mannerisms from Vladdy, obviously a right-handed hitter, as opposed to Soto from the left side. But you see similarities there. And yeah, it would be, I think if you're the Jays, that's got to be the dream, that Vladdy becomes just so much more in command and so much less reactive to, oh, that was, I thought that was inside off the plate. And a bit more like, all right, man, like you're wrong, I'll crush the next one anyway.
Totally. Also interested to see how Teoscar Hernandez builds off of pretty spectacular 2020. Interested to see if Rowdy Tellez can, you know, carry forward some of the plate approach improvements that he made last year, and just what he can kind of become as a big leaguer. Is another guy that, you know, we mentioned it with pitchers, like, you know, we talked about Rowdy Tellez, like he's a kid, like, I don't know, he's 26, right? So it's kind of like, it's kind of go time for your career now. And then just kind of very, very like small scale things. Kind of interested to see how the bench plays out. Like, who's the backup catcher, Reese McGuire or Alejandro Kirk? And then also, like, is it a three-man bench or a four-man bench? If it's a three-man bench, is that Joe Panic there? Or does that, you know, do they carry Santiago Espinal? You know, how that sort of, it's, you know, it's small stuff, but I will be interested to see how that plays out over the spring.
And I think there's room still to add a good lefty bat. You know, and I don't think, again, going back to the reliever conversation, I don't think handedness has to drive everything. Ultimately, it's about the quality that you can get, regardless of, you know, what hand the ball is coming out of or what side of the plate they're standing on. So you don't want to get too hung up on that. But I do think there's an opportunity there just to balance things out. They have a lot of really good right-handed hitters. Usually, they're probably going to have a right-handed hitter on the bench. I mean, that's going to happen. Just by virtue of how righty heavy their lineup is. So great, if you need a right-handed pinch hitting option, you've got one. But I think there are also going to be times where, whether they're playing a National League team, you know, depending on the lineup that Montoyo rolls out that day, there are going to be chances where you want to have a really good lefty bat on the bench. And so I think there's room for that. I don't think, especially in this day and age, you have a taxi squad, you have big bullpens already, you have 26 roster spots. To me, I think you should carry four bench players. Like, I don't see the need to carry these like nine-man bullpens, but that's what teams seem to do. I honestly don't really get it, but that's what teams seem to do.
Well, and the Blue Jays in particular, too. Yeah. Like, they have not been afraid to carry a short bench and to have a really big bullpen. Like, that's actually, you know, more often than not in recent times, that's something that they have done. I wouldn't expect them to do anything differently going forward.
Right. Yeah. So, and the other thing I would add there is just the prospects, right? Like Martin, Groshans, like those guys, at some point this year, we could see them and that'll be a lot of fun.
Yes. I was going to ask you, any kind of non-roster dudes that you are looking forward to watching throughout spring? I'll throw Simeon Woods Richardson out there, because I think that he's going to be a pretty big storyline in camp. Like, I think a lot of people are going to be talking about him, because like, you just haven't had a chance to see it to this point as a Blue Jays fan. But I think that he is going to surprise some people with how polished he is for his age and like how advanced he is at his age. And as I kind of said earlier, it would not surprise me at all if he makes his major league debut this season. Like, I think that's very realistic for him. He is he is really out of it, man. Like, he has been on a really accelerated development path, even from back in the Mets days, and the Blue Jays kept him on that path. I think he's the best pitching prospect in this organization, and I think the people are going to be pretty impressed with how advanced he is.
Awesome. Yeah, that'll be fun to watch for sure. And then for me, yeah, it would be on the position player side, again, kind of adding strength to strength, because I think that is organizationally, clearly the lineup is what's driving the team right now. And then some of their better prospects are position players, infielders, guys like Austin Martin, Jordan Groshans. I'm really curious to see what they can do, especially we'll get some minor league numbers, as opposed to being in this kind of black box that the alt site was last year. Like, it will be eventually pretty interesting to see how these guys perform.
Yeah. Jordan Groshans hasn't played a game in 20 months, right? Like an actual, affiliated baseball game. Obviously he's at the alt site, right? But yeah, an actual game. It's been a long time.
Well, and it goes back to your point about the error bars, right? Like, this season is just harder to predict because we don't even, like, 2020 is like, it's so hard to take real, draw real conclusions from what happened that year.
And I think the thing that people will come away with when it comes to guys like Groshans and Martin and Woods Richardson is just how confident some of these kids are. Like, getting to be in my position and talk to some of them and write about them and interview these kids, like, they all have that Bo Bichette thing, where it's like, I know I'm only like 20, 21 years old, but like, I think I'm a big leaguer today. And I think I'm going to break camp with this team, and I'm not scared of anybody, and I'm incredibly confident in my abilities. And like, they carry that confidence on the field. Like, Simeon Woods Richardson is like a fiery competitor, man. Like, this is a dude who like wants to beat you and like isn't afraid. There are some Marcus Stroman tendencies in there, like in terms of like celebrating and enjoying himself on the mound and nodding his head and just like the swag that he carries onto the field. And I think the Groshans has that, and I think the Martin has that. Like, I think that Adam Klopfenstein, who's going to be in camp, has that. So there is really very much like a little bit of that culture coming up through the minor leagues, and a lot of these guys like know they're good, think they're going to be good for a long time, and like want to get to the big leagues today. Like, they all have that sort of that edge that we've gotten to know from Bo Bichette. So I think that like people are going to get exposed to that a little bit this spring. It's going to be interesting to see.
For sure. Yeah, it's always good. Hopefully get to watch a lot of these spring games. It'll be nice to watch baseball again after, it's obviously been months since the Jays last played. So it will be fun once all that gets started.
Yeah, even you get to our first look at guys like Miguel Giraldo and like Leo Jimenez. Two, teenagers, international signees, but like two guys who are in big league camp for a reason, because club's really high on them. And one other name I'll throw out there, Joey Murray. It's like, just watch this kid go. Like, just watch some of the swings and misses he gets. I'm not saying he's going to be like, front of the rotation dude or anything like that. I'm not saying he's going to be a Verlander Scherzer, but watch this kid have like, a Yusmeiro Petit career, where he is just hanging around, man. He is just getting big leaguers out consistently and putting up strong numbers and flying under the radar a little bit. Like, that's how he's almost gotten this far, is flying under the radar, because he doesn't have like spectacular wipeout stuff, but he knows how to pitch and he gets a lot of swing and miss. And, like, even just talking to some of the guys who were at the alt site who faced him, and they're like, he's getting better. Like, he's like the real deal. He's pretty good. And Murray is another guy who I'd put in that class of, pitchers who I think there is a very good chance that we see at the big league level this year.
Wow. Well, it'll be fun to watch. Yusmeiro Petit, that's like a sneaky, like kind of complimentary comp to a pitcher, because like he has had such good staying power. So as you said, it's not like that all-star that you think of, but there are way worse career paths out there than Yusmeiro Petit. And we should say too, anyone looking for kind of a rundown, Arden wrote one up on Sportsnet. So that's the full breakdown of all of the different invitees to this year's camp.
Yes, lots of links in there to the past, things that I've, more expansive things I've written about all those guys, and maybe something expansive on a prospect coming up pretty soon here at sportsnet.ca, something that I'm pretty excited about. So that's coming up, and Shai and I are obviously going to have coverage of camp and all the goings on and everything that you need to know about the Blue Jays. We roll towards the season. Well, that's going to be it for this episode of At the Letters. I want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Mike Tassoni. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Thanks as always for listening. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.